Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan, service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast. My name is Tom Butler and joining me for this special episode is Mr. Tom Wheatley.
What's up?
And Mr. Brendan Duffy.
Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. Well, your ears don't deceive you. We are back. A is for Amazon. It's the big story. Why are we back?
Well, probably the most important thing that's happened in the Bond history probably ever, actually, apart from like the start of it all. I mean, we're back because the rights of Bond have gone from the Broccoli's now.
Yeah, well, we get the story straight. The way that they put it is that Amazon MGM Studios, Michael G. Wilson, Barbara Broccoli announced that they've formed a joint venture to house the James Bond intellectual property rights, and those parties will remain co-owners of the franchise. The new terms of the new venture, Amazon MGM Studios will gain creative control of the James Bond franchise following closing of the transaction. So, we had pretty much drawn a line under the James Bond A to Z podcast, right?
Yeah,
we're finished. And I think the one thing that we said that would bring us back was Bond 26. I was not expecting this to be the outcome that would bring us back together, because this really, I would say, draws a bow, like puts a bow on top of everything that we did with the podcast, right? The podcast now is a archive of what we can now consider the classic Eon era of Bond, right? This is the end of it. This is the final chapter. This is the end of the story as we know it of the James Bond movies.
So yeah, we should have a nice, neat A to Z.
But this, I mean, does mark a new beginning for Bond as well. So it's not all doom and gloom, but I thought it was a good time to get back together to put that final piece of the puzzle together, because we've done episodes on pretty much every aspect of the James Bond films, from Cubby Broccoli, who started the films with Harry Saltzman. We did a whole episode on both of those. We did episodes on Barbara Broccoli. We did episodes on Eon and MGM and all those different players. But now this new deal means that for the first time in the 60 plus years history of the James Bond film, the Broccoli family is no longer involved creatively. So it's a big change. It is a big, big change. And it means that in the future, you know, the guardrails are off now, right?
Certainly does.
Yeah. It'll be a difference in the way that they approach, you know, any project that is to do with the Bond franchise now. It was sort of felt like it was protected when, you know, with Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli at the helm. They had a certain way of doing things. They'd continued the legacy from what Harry Saltzman and Cubby Broccoli had started, really. Yeah. And that certainly feels like that we are now, it's a massive gear change. Yeah.
Well, the Bond franchise, you know, has undergone many changes of ownership and things within the films and stuff. Has always been, it's probably an anomaly in the world of movies and IP, in that you've always had, you know, a family taking it through all those years of films. And I don't think there's any other film series that's ever done that. Any other series of any sort.
It's completely unique. And I think when we did the podcast and the full run of it, we always said that one of the best things about the Bond films is the story behind the Bond films. The story is even more interesting than sometimes than the films themselves. So that, I think it's worth at this point acknowledging all the work that Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson did to carry on that legacy of Cubby and Harry, and you know they were stewards of the series from GoldenEye onwards, which is now 30 years ago. So you can almost draw a line down the middle, Cubby's half, and now Barbara and Michael's half. Cubby and Harry's half, and Barbara and Michael's half. GoldenEye being the point where they handed the torch over from Cubby to Harry to Barbara and Michael. And to see them both go, you know, it's actually quite a sad moment, really, like you say, because they've always been the stewards of that series. And every single time that we ever speculated about what might happen next or what might come down the road was always seen through the prism of them, of those two. So now that they're not involved, anything could happen, and for good and for bad.
Yeah. We're not talking about the good and the bad yet, are we?
Not yet. Before we get to that point of talking about, you know, the future and whatnot, why don't we look back at the history of it and see, you know, because a lot of people might listen to this, might not even understand how we got to this point, right? And we've covered this in depth. So I thought it'd be a good time to sort of do a bit of a recap for anyone sort of unsure how we got here. I mean, I have trouble explaining it to my wife and to anyone. It's quite complicated, isn't it?
It's really complicated. It's up until yesterday, the ownership and the company details and the business side of the whole Bond franchise, I hadn't thought about it for a long time. And going back through it all, it is a complicated scenario of how they've got to this point. And there's a number of milestones within that. I mean, we're not going to get into detail about it here, because if you want to listen to the actual history of it, you can go back to the older podcast where we get into a lot of detail about how the Bond franchise was developed. But in the early days, it was a bit of a land grab for Bond. There were different people owning you know, Casino Royale, owning Thunderball, and until about 1997, there's even longer than that. It's about 2000, wasn't it? 2000s that Sony
the Thunderball stuff came back. Sorry, the Spectre stuff came back. Yeah, Brendan, did you look into the history of it?
Well, I went all the way back to the early days and why we got Eon Productions. Down to Harry Saltzman and Cubby Broccoli. I would recommend going back to our archives and listening to those respective episodes, because we deep dived on both of those really interesting characters. But they started a partnership in 1961, and that meant that they could bring the first Bond film, Dr. No, to the screens. Again, we've done a deep dive on everything we're talking about. We've deep dived, so if something piques your interest, do go back. It's all there to sort of enjoy, if you can enjoy it. Their relationship, I mean, that's another part of the story as well. Their relationship actually began to deteriorate, because they had different visions for where they wanted to take Bond themselves. So that partnership was always destined to fail at some point, because they would rotate from one to the other who would be creatively in charge, wouldn't they? And that meant that from film to film, you'd get more playful films from Saltzman. That's right, isn't it?
No, I think it's the other way around. I'm trying to think back to it now, because we should have done more research in this. But then what I will say on the two creatives, Harry and Cubby, they both came from very different backgrounds, right? Harry was renowned for his, I mean, he was Canadian, but he was renowned for his gritty kitchen sink type British dramas. He brought a lot of the British sensibility to Bond. Cubby, on the flip side, you know, he'd come into it from making like action epics and like things in far-flung places, in exotic places. And actually the bringing of those two sensibilities together were formed the basis of Dr. No, and then from the James Bond films onwards. But you are right, they do go from, they veer from one being fantastic to one being much less fantastic. And I want to say, was it Harry was the more fantastical of the two? And he was the one that had, was ordering shoes for elephants when they were in.
I think that's the story. Yeah. Yeah.
In The Man with the Golden Gun. And that, I think, is the last one that he did.
So in 1975, Harry Saltzman sells his share of the Bond franchise. He sells that to United Artists. And that leads to the troubles that we, you know, throughout the years that were only resolved in the last, you know, 20 years. So it was a tumultuous period.
Yeah. And it's worth saying that Harry got himself into a huge load of money problems, right? And that's what facilitated that issue there. Like, he had lots of other projects on the cards. He was working on lots of other things while they were making the Bond films, including like the Ypres File films, and stuff like that. And then he got into this issue with the Technicolor people, and they basically, yeah, he just basically got himself into a huge financial mess. And then they did, in the end, he sold his part of the franchise.
And it was also having personal problems at the time as well, wasn't he?
I think so.
It spiraled a bit at this point. And I think that's quite a sad story, actually, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, his health declined very much from there. Yeah. So 75, he sells his share to United Artists.
Yeah. But that, the Harry and Cubby stuff is just part of the whole story, isn't it? So it wasn't until 2013 that Sony announced that they had the rights to everything. And that was a massive shift in the Bond saga, because previously there were the outliers, Thunderball and Casino Royale, that have been a complete mess for a very long time, owned by different people. So you had Kevin McClory, which is a series of legal battles and remakes, like Never Say Never Again, for quite a long period of time. And then you had all of the early years with Gregory Ratoff with the Casino Royale rights to the films. So it's never been a simple
cut and dried.
There's always stuff going on. But I think with Sony's announcement that they had all the rights, there was almost sort of it felt quite nice, because suddenly you could go, right, we can do anything now. They can use any rights, they can use any character. There's no legal battles that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But that was under the stewardship of the Broccolis and Michael. But now that has completely changed, because you've essentially shifted all of that to someone completely different, which is a scary prospect. And there are some good and bad points to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So with the Sony situation, that was, Sony were distributing the Bond film. They had a deal with Eon to distribute the Bond films at that point. And they did this deal where they swapped the Spider-Man rights for the Casino Royale rights. And that brought everything in house. And it was actually only till 2013, 2014 that the Thunderball rights then were brought back in, because of McClory dying and bringing Thunderball back in. So that then put everything, all the eggs in one basket. But you're right, like, Cubby was the man who, from the point where Harry sold his rights on, he retained full creative control over the Bond films. He was the, like, everything he said was gospel. There was no interference from the studio. He, whatever he wanted to do. But then he was always at the mercy of the studio as well. And so the fortunes of Bond waxed and waned with the fortunes of the United Artists, who went on to become MGM, and MGM is now Amazon. So the rights has always been split those two ways. And sometimes it's worked out well for them, and sometimes it hasn't worked out well for them. And where we got to a few years ago was MGM was just on its arse. And this is why, you know, it took so long to get Bond movies made. It was really hard to get them funded. That was part of the reason why. And then, you know, MGM was suddenly up for sale and they were courting streamers to bring them in. And we talked about that at the time, right? They were talking to Apple, they were talking to lots of different people. And in the end, Amazon was the company that bought the rights to Bond. And then, so that is then, that sort of brings us up to date with the sort of history. But the sort of the slight prehistory to the announcement that was made on the 20th of Feb is that there was a report in the Wall Street Journal in December. Did you read this?
Yes. Mm.
In which Barbara Broccoli is said to have called the people at Amazon effing idiots. They saw issue with the way that they talked about James Bond as being content in meetings, apparently. It was quite a well-sourced and timely placed feature about the whole situation, because we've all been sat here waiting for a new Bond film since 2021, right? The last shot of No Time to Die happened in 2020, October 2020. So it's been nearly 5 years since they rolled cameras on that.
Yeah.
And everyone was sat here going, what's going on? The assumption was made that, you know, they were taking their time. They were developing it. But now it seems there was just an impasse. Neither side could agree on what the future meant, what the future for Bond looked like, for Bond 26 and beyond.
When that news came out in December, I thought, oh, well, this doesn't look good for Bond being under the Amazon banner. And I thought that somehow Broccoli and Wilson would sort of break away somehow. But it's gone completely the other way to what I expected.
In what way? You thought they would cash out and...
I just thought they'd either try and take Bond with them somehow, or they would just not make any Bond and just put a restriction on it because it's Amazon involved and they couldn't agree. But this is completely, completely left field to how I thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
Relinquishing all that creative
control. To me, it now looks like, and in hindsight, No Time to Die retrospectively feels like they were subconsciously killing the thing, right? To draw a line under it for themselves. Because now it gives Amazon a complete clean slate to work with, but also in their minds, you know, I wonder, like, they're not getting on, they're not getting any younger. Michael is in his 80s, Barbara's in her 60s. Yeah. They had perhaps, you know, reached the end of what they thought they could do with Bond. And all this time between No Time to Die and now really was them waiting to like both sides staring. There's a blinking contest. Who's going to blink first? And that Wall Street Journal article was a sign that one of them or both of them needed people to know what was going on. They needed to break cover and say, we're not doing it out of spite, or we're not doing anything because we can't be bothered. We're not doing something because we can't agree on something. And it felt like they had to get that message out there for people to take notice and to force the hand one way or the other. Mm. And, you know, the hand was forced. And by the sounds of it, the hand was forced into delivering a huge truck of money at Barbara and Michael's front door. Because if you believe what the Deadline reports, Amazon have paid an extra $1 billion to gain creative control. That's $1 billion going to Barbara, Michael, Greg Wilson, whoever has creative input into Bond. That is a payday and a half just for Amazon to be able to take control.
Well, but I think whenever you look at any of these sort of rights discussions and stuff with these big companies, it's always about the money. I mean, you look at the Rings of Power, the amount of money that went behind that. The money's not a problem. If that's going to win the argument, if that's going to move things forward, then that's not a problem for them. Amazon's a tech company. It's not a creative company. So ultimately, they're looking at the IP as working out the value of the IP against the cost, and the value of the IP is massive.
Totally right. I mean, just a little history of Amazon Video, right? Amazon Video has been going, or Amazon Prime, I think has been a going thing from like 2015 onwards. That is actually not that long ago. And they've been incredibly bullish in getting into the market. Like, I don't know if you remember, but one of the first deals they did was for the Clarkson, the Top Gear spin-off in 2015.
Yes.
I think that was not long after Prime Video launched here. And they launched with a bunch of, you know, middling titles like, you know, Transparent and Bosch and Sneaky Pete and all these titles that you just don't remember anymore. But they've just gone aggressively after more and more things, like you say, buying in Lord of the Rings. And this is the biggest statement they can make right now is with Bond. But one thing I will say about Barbara and Michael, and something that people will miss, is that they never followed trends.
Mm.
Right?
No.
To a certain extent, yes, with a bit of Bourne, right? But the Jason Bourne films took a bit from Bond because, you know, they were in the same sort of world. And yes, Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace were more Bourne-like than other Bond films.
Yeah.
But my point is they never, and this is the problem that we might have with Amazon, is they never went to give people what they wanted. It's one of those things where it's like you go to a restaurant and they serve something and you didn't know you were going to love it, but you love it. And it's like, this is exactly what you want. And that's what you want from Bond. And will Amazon be able to do that? That's the question, right?
They'll be given a 15-page menu and you can build your own pizza and stuff like that. So to carry on your analogy.
Yeah. Well, like we talked about before, right? They'll get to a point with Amazon technology and whatnot, and you'll be able to choose which Bond you put in your Bond film, right? You'll be able to put George Lazenby in Diamonds Are Forever if you, you know.
I think I know what BJ's going to choose. Can you put him in every film?
Brosnan. Brosnan and everyone.
All 25, yeah.
Should we talk about what we know for certain?
Yeah.
At this stage. Yeah. What do we know?
What do we know? Well,
what you've just said. I don't think we know much more than that, do we?
We know that now Barbara and Michael aren't involved in any creative decisions.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean?
Well, we know that Amazon are going to have to find a new team of people who are going to take on the Bond legacy, writers, directors, producers, and however they're going to do it. But are essentially starting from scratch. I doubt they're going to use Eon as from a consultative point of view and sort of get their guidance if they've made that statement that they're not going to have them involved.
No, that's true. That statement was very definitive, wasn't it? Mm. And if you cast your mind back to when Disney bought Lucasfilm, 2012, which coincidentally, I was at a screening of Skyfall when that news broke. And I remember coming out and being over the moon at the news that Disney had bought Lucasfilm. I thought that was the best thing that could ever happen because there's going to be more Star Wars.
Yeah.
But when I heard this news, it was the complete opposite. It was the complete opposite. It was like, oh my God, now what's going to happen? Whereas on that side, it was like, yes, three more Star Wars films. Now it's like infinite James Bond films. And I'm like, oh, is that what I want? I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I think at that point, there weren't many big IPs that had been bought up. So, you know, the Star Wars being bought up by a streamer, you didn't really know what was going to happen. Marvel hadn't reached that point. It was still good at that point. People were still enjoying Marvel at that point. Whereas now we know what generally happens once streaming services have got hold of a big IP. We know what Disney's done with Star Wars. We know Lord of the Rings, all those sorts of things. So we're probably a little bit more skeptical about
that's so true. Yeah.
The way that people will do those. So, so now I think it's, you know, there's expectations that of what's going to happen.
Go on, Brendan.
If we're skeptical, cause we've seen it happen time and time again, they will be treating this with, you know, with maybe a bit more thought. Because they don't want to do the same thing. So there's hope there that
I'll go back to my reference to say that Amazon is a tech company. They all are tech companies. They're all based on the principle that, you know, views, engagement, memberships, all those sorts of things. And you pull the levers for anything that will affect that. So they're never going to treat it like like Barbara and Michael have. They're never going to say,
no,
don't rush. We're going to leave another 2 years to get this right. We're not going to, it's got to be like, we've got to have this next year. That's our big launch next year. That's the membership push we've got. We're going to see, you know, 200 million more people sign up as a result of this marketing campaign. I don't think they will ever treat it like it has been.
The KPIs aren't going to be make a memorable movie, are they? It's not going to be like...
I think they will to start off with. I think that initially you'll get a load of people involved. They'll be very like, we've got Bond now. We need to do it right. We need to, you know, get the right people in. We need to treat it like Bond has been treated to get the fans back on it. But I don't think that's going to last very long.
If I can just take it back to what I was saying about Lucasfilm. So when Star Wars bought Lucasfilm, I don't know if you remember, but George Lucas also handed over a blueprint of where he thought the films could go next. He'd drawn up ideas for 7, 8, and 9. Disney threw them away, basically. Mm. But there was also an inherent, like, built-in, almost like rule book for Star Wars, right? You can do this, you can't do this. There's certain things like you can't, in Star Wars, you can't put like something that you can buy in a shop on screen in Star Wars. I don't know if you told me that before, Brendan, was it? Everything has to be handcrafted that's on screen.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's one of the rules. And Bond comes with a bunch of those, right? Yeah. That we know... that make a Bond film, and if you watch Never Say Never Again, when they're not there, you know, oh crap. But it's also all subtle things like how a Bond actor interacts in the real world when they're not as Bond, like they don't ever wear tuxedos in photo shoots and stuff like that. My point is, all of this stuff was built into how Barbara and Michael did stuff. This was hard baked in. Mm-hmm. Now that they're not there, like, the rules just become so much looser, right?
Yeah. Oh, look at the Rings of Power. The rules are going out the window. And Tolkien, basically, Ian Fleming didn't build a world. Ian Fleming built a character, and you know, it was really about the character. Tolkien built a world, and Rings of Power basically just blows away any of those rules and just does what it wants because, you know, he's trying to make a series that's interesting and fun for new generations. But I mean, if you apply that to Bond, there's not really a world. There's some rules, but I mean, it's going to be pretty easy to break them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I would say to that is Michael G. Wilson and Barbara already broke one of those rules by killing Bond off.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. So just taking it back to what we know, the only other thing that we know is that Michael's retiring. Mm-hmm. So like that, he is obviously a titan in the world of Bond, but it's sad to see him retire. But when I went to the Bond premiere, he announced that like he was stepping down. Basically, it was sort of implied in what he was saying when he was on stage. Barbara will continue doing what she does. She's producing, you know, she'll work with Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I imagine. And she's got plays and stuff that she's working on.
Still doing Othello?
Yeah, Othello, Daniel Craig.
Yeah, Othello, and also a version of Buena Vista Social Club on Broadway.
Right.
So this brings us to what we don't know, right? What don't we know about the future? And I think the main thing, and this is the thing I keep saying when people, I'm talking to people about this, is that the main thing that we don't know is who, if Barbara and Michael aren't making the creative decisions, who is? And something that really worried me yesterday when the news came out was then Jeff Bezos tweeted, who should we have play Bond next?
I saw that.
That's a not good early sign. You can't crowdsource this stuff. It goes back to what I was saying. Barbara and Michael never gave people what they wanted. It was what they needed, right? And that's different. So if we're in the realm of Jeff Bezos making decisions, then guess what? Henry Cavill's going to be the next James Bond. And I could just dread to think like what the other decisions along that route would be.
And also the tone of that message, you can read between the lines, who should we have next? It's like is it just going to be a revolving door?
Yeah.
But we'll see. Mm. But we don't know. That's what we don't know. And
we don't know.
Go on.
If I had to speculate on what would happen and who would make the creative decisions. I think like the James Gunn situation at DC is probably a good example of like where this will probably go, right? James Gunn was brought in after making, what did he make for DC?
For Marvel?
Guardians.
Guardians, and that, sorry, and then he was hired by DC to take over, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did Peacemaker.
Peacemaker, he did the Suicide Squad first, yeah. Didn't he? Yeah. And then they brought him in to have complete creative control over the universe.
Yeah, but there's a big difference with this, because the reason why they get people like James Gunn in is because they're massive comic fans, right?
Yeah.
And comic fans love James Gunn because he's a massive comic fan.
Right.
Bond fans are generally older people who have watched Bond throughout their lives, and they are not going to get one of those. They're going to get a young person in because the young people is where the audience is. So they're not going to take that same approach. They're going to want to shift it because, you know, before with Barbara and Michael, the Bond legacy had so much gravitas and so much excitement around it that you bring in a new Bond, people trusted it and went, I'm going to go and give this a go. I don't think they'll do that now. I think they'll go, who is going to bring in the most people to watch this stuff? Who do we need? A younger person? Do we need a woman? All these sorts of things where they're not thinking, what's the story? What's the long-term story of this? What are we trying to do? So they're thinking, what are going to be the short-term? I mean, I don't know this. I'm just assuming based on my knowledge of streaming series that have been created in the past. But I mean, even the Rings of Power is essentially, I keep bringing that back because it's the biggest thing that Amazon has ever paid for and is a good example of an IP getting pretty messed up.
But they did bring in the two guys from Game of Thrones, right? Two of the writers from Game of Thrones became runners on the showrunners on that. So that to me suggests that Amazon want to bring in the best people they can for it.
Yeah.
I honestly think that they will need to bring in someone who will shepherd a universe of stories to screen.
Yeah.
And when you look at the list of candidates, like, is it going to be one of the Amazon heads of studios? Probably not. They've got enough on their plate. I think they will need to bring someone in. Mm. If I had to speculate, I think they would bring in someone who knows what they're doing, because I think the very first thing that Amazon will want to do is put a date on the calendar that says Bond 26 now.
Yeah.
I mean, Bond 26 on this date. So like November 2027, that's my prediction. And as soon as they plant that flag in the sand, everyone is going to come running. Everyone in Hollywood who has an interest in making big movies is going to want a piece of the action. I don't think they need to do... Marvel has the problem where they tend to try and nurture directors. And the reason they do that is because the younger directors will stick to their vision, right? They can be marshaled. They can be shaped. They bring in the upcoming directors who they think are visionary, but they make them do what they want to do. This is the opposite way around. They don't need to do that. Amazon needs someone to come in and say, this is my vision. This is what you're going to do next. And to me, there's only one person that really stands out who's got a ready-made Bond, and that's Danny Boyle. Mm. Danny Boyle is in a position where he's British. He was starting to make a Bond film. He's got a ready-made Bond film. He's got a ready-made writer and a script with John Hodge. He is placed in a perfect position to be the guy that they bring in to take on at least the first one and then marshal it on forward, like Christopher Nolan did at DC when he came in. He sort of then produced Man of Steel and all the DC movies going on from there.
Yeah.
And that's my take on it.
But you're basing this on the principle that it's going to follow a movie release schedule. It may not. They may just go, the easiest way to do this and really start to make the best of this series straight away and this IP is to do a TV series straight away and then work towards a movie, which is something that happens quite a lot at the moment.
Yeah. I just don't see them taking the Bond series and making their first statement a TV series. I don't see that. Don't see
it
that.
It might not be a Bond, like, you know, a Bond TV series. They might start with one of the other ones and go, we need to use this IP while we're working on that Bond film. But people have been waiting for a very long time for some Bond content, to use that word.
What are you on about? Road to a Million Season 2, 2026, baby.
Is it coming?
Oh, it's coming. Yeah, it's been filmed.
Get that on the diary.
Yeah.
Go on holiday when that's on. But it's a very long time. They're not going to sit on this IP and go, you know, it's going to be almost 2 years until the next one comes out. They're going to, they've got to use this somehow.
But if you think about 2027, like November 2027, that's going to film next year. I mean, I know, like, I'm thinking ahead, but they've got to get moving on it. And I think longer they leave it, the more it stagnates. And yeah, you're probably right. A TV series might make more sense to start with. But what I would say is this is a series that has not been exploited to this point, at any point. They have been so guarded with it. Like James Bond Day last year, what would we get? Like 3 mini documentaries on Prime Video. If it was me, I would be looking to what we already had and exploiting the shit out of it.
Yeah, yeah. But this is Amazon. Amazon don't really make big cinema films that you know, are designed for cinema, that are going to be on the cinema for a long period of time. That doesn't benefit them very much. You know, if they make one film, goes on cinema for a bit, then goes on to streaming, because it's Amazon, people know it's going to go on streaming pretty quickly. So you probably assume that the box office of that is going to be lower than what you'd get from a normal Bond film where it doesn't go streaming straight away.
I don't know. I think you might be generalizing a little bit there, because they did have, like, Amazon MGM have released a few big movies, like Saltburn, for example. That was an Amazon movie, Oscar nominated, as was Air, the Ben Affleck movie. That was an Amazon MGM movie. Yeah, Challengers, again.
But all of them went onto streaming very quickly, especially Saltburn.
But they had full theatrical releases. This is another thing that we don't know, right? One of the things, as I was saying, going back to George Lucas, and one of the things I hoped that Amazon have baked into their deal with Amazon is that they go straight to cinema. That was something they always stood firm on.
Yeah.
And now we just don't know if that is if that is part of the deal.
Yep.
I think the next step has to be a film, though, because if they're starting afresh, what world? We don't know what the world is that they're going to create. So if you go in with a series, I just think, what do you do? Who do you, what character? Because we don't know who's playing anyone, or even if those characters will be in the world of Bond that they create.
I totally agree. And I think if they build to a film, there's an opportunity there where you could do like a 6-part miniseries as the prequel to the film, right? Like the build up to it. You know, I always think about, like, you know, how most Bond films start, as they say, in media res, right? The story has already begun. Like, you think about the very first scene of Skyfall, and he's going to rescue that list of the agents. Like, you could tell the story of that, right? And that could be the lead up to the movie. If you had a little, like, mini series that led up to the movie, that would be quite an interesting prospect that they haven't never done before. Yeah. In terms of, like, other things that we don't know, Brendan, you raised a good point about the home of James Bond. Where will it live?
Yeah, so it's been, obviously been at Pinewood for most of its time, from the odd occasion. But Amazon have real estate at Shepperton, and they've spent a lot of money building brand new stages, brand new, they've got brand new backlots, huge. And these are vast amounts of land that they've, you know, they've basically got half of Shepperton. Is it likely that they're going to do that and then go schlep back to Pinewood and make Bond just for the history? Because Disney own, well, Disney have basically bought out all the stages. They make everything at Pinewood. So it would complicate things and make things even more expensive. So that's another thing we don't know.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A lot of the doom-mongering in the press reports were sort of saying, oh, you know, Bond has been sold. It's going to lose its Britishness and be sold to American. Britain's lost Bond. But for me, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever because Cubby was American. Harry was Canadian. Barbara, half American. Michael, half American. They're all American. It's always been in the hands of the Americans, right? Mm. Yes, the home of Bond is here. And most of the creatives on it are British, and there's no reason why they would change that. I can't see them, you know, no films get made in Hollywood anymore. They're not going to make James Bond in Hollywood, are they?
I think that sort of statement smacks of someone who doesn't understand the film industry. Hmm. You name every franchise, every big franchise that's currently being, you know, released, it's shot in the UK.
Yeah.
So then that's not going to change. That would be the biggest surprise if Bond was stopped being shot in the UK.
Yeah. Like somewhere like Mexico.
Yeah, for a one-off.
But I think they will probably start shooting at Shepperton and maybe, you know, use the 007 stage for a token gesture to its heritage. Mm.
Yeah,
because that's not unheard of, right? Just using one stage at a studio for something. And the 007 stage is still the biggest, right?
But yeah, I mean, it's huge. It is the biggest. But with that means it's booked years in advance. So that's another issue that they might have.
Right. What else don't we know about this? We don't know who the next James Bond is. Still don't know who the next James Bond is or who the director is. I think that obviously going to be the first thing they move on. And I don't know if you read any of the reports, but they were saying that they had a Bond Bible that they were shopping around Eon ahead of this deal. And they were meeting with directors, meeting with writers. So they obviously have something that they can take to people and say, this is what we want. What have you got? And I think Amazon will now just be flooded. If not flooded, they will have made all this or made all these connections first. If we had Bond, what would you do? Hmm. Right. With all these creatives out there. But I think until they find that person who's the creative at the top of the studio, at the top of this pile, they can't move ahead. So the first thing they need to do, appoint someone to run Bond. Then they can make a decision on a director and then we'll find out who a Bond is. I honestly think we'll find out all of that before the end of this year.
Oh yeah.
Do you think they'll do a GoldenEye style event where they announce everyone?
That's a really great question. No. I don't know. Because these things just go out in trades. They're like the trades leak them before it happens. The Sun will find out before it happened. Mm. Although I will say no one leaked this story before it happened on Thursday. No one.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's means that most of the time when Bond stories are leaked, they want them to be leaked, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there might be a legacy thing that happens where whoever gets involved is probably quite keen on Bond or has a, you know, history of being involved with Bond, and the team that are around it will want to do similar things to what has been done in the past, because you're essentially the people that you want to get in first are the Bond fans. You want to do it the same way that you've previously done it. You don't want to massively change it because you don't want to lose the Bond fans. Obviously you want to get a new audience as well because it's all about the reach. But I think there will be a sense of, for at least a couple of years, trying to do things how we were used to them as Bond fans.
I think you're right. I think they will want to keep a steady, an even keel to start with.
Bond release day, the news day, all that sort of stuff is such a big deal for Bond fans and how it's been done in the past. Not, you know, how they would release a, you know, whoever's in Red One or something like that. It's a little bit more, it's been honed for 40 or so years. It's, I think we will get a similar thing to what we've had in the past. It'd be quite nice to see.
So yesterday when the news broke, I put some stuff out on our Instagram. Two things asking people, first of all, whether they thought the news was good or bad. Very simple, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to find it. It was a vote. We had nearly 100 votes, and the vote count is 70% of people thought it was bad news. 30% of people thought it was good news. So some people out there optimistic. Second part of it was, have you got any comments about it? So here's some of them from our listeners. Lofty Lego said, it's the end of an era. Craig NZ, the beginning of the end, which we sort of said. Double O Griffin said, change can be good. And let's say, I think it actually wanted to bring this up as well, because Barbara and Michael, obviously, I've been very, you know, thank you for your service and all the great work that you've done. They've made some great decisions over the time, over the years. I would also say they've made an equally amount of bad decisions.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
When we think about, when you think about the tenure, right? So they came in on, they were, I mean, they were around before, right? Barbara did various behind the scenes jobs. Michael G. Wilson wrote a bunch of them right before he sort of took over the reins for GoldenEye. Yeah. With GoldenEye, they inherited Pierce Brosnan from Cubby. That was lined up for the head of the Living Daylights, and he was basically the heir apparent to Bond, regardless of who they auditioned for it. And GoldenEye was a smash. There's no denying that, right?
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Cubby, Barbara and Michael, you know, they did what they did to bring it to screen. And then I would say each progressive film after that, Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough, Die Another Day, progressively got worse. To me, yeah. There was a lot of bad decisions made on each of those subsequent movies. Casino Royale, they absolutely smashed it out of the park. Daniel Craig, Martin Campbell, every decision, creative decision behind that was great. Quantum of Solace, that was rushed into production. That was a total mess. Yeah. Skyfall, and to me, that was a bad decision. Skyfall, they... Sam Mendes was a great shout. That was one of their great decisions that they made. And Skyfall is, to me, is just classic Bond. And then Spectre, they fumbled it again, right? They got the rights to Spectre and Blofeld, and it just completely was fumbled.
Yeah. Well, if anybody listens back to our episode in-depth pods, it's probably quite evident that there's quite a lot of them that we're not that impressed with. But I think there's an element of Bond is like, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. If you're a Bond fan, you sort of follow the whole journey. You realize it's
rough and smooth, like a football team, right?
Yeah. But I think the important thing to note, and the thing, I can't remember who the guy was who messaged it, but change is good. I think that's true in the fact that, you know, times are changing. The way that people consume things, the way that young people watch movies, what they want from them is changing. We're middle-aged men, you know, you're not pandering to our market anymore. You're pandering to a wider market. And, you know, if you had Barbara still doing it for the next 20 years, the same way that she's always done it, I think it would struggle quite a lot in the modern day. People expected different things. So I think there's a way of saying, you know, it's probably, you know, change can be good. I think it can be good for certain people. I think it's going to alienate some people, but it just depends what you're going for.
And yeah, I mean, bring it back to what I was, my point was going to be is that one thing that will change for certain, or I feel like will change for certain, is that Purvis and Wade will no longer be involved. Eon very much hitched their wagon to Purvis and Wade from The World Is Not Enough onwards. They've been involved in every single Bond script then. And, you know, like, God bless them. They did well on certain occasions, but most of the time, a lot of the time they work with other writers. But I think, you know, that's one thing I am grateful for, is that we're going to get a new, it's just an injection of new life, right? I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge, whatever you think of her and like her work, but her work on No Time to Die brought that film to life. That film could have been very somber and very dour without her, you know, bringing that script to life.
Yeah.
So that to me is a positive.
Yeah.
Some other responses. Sorry, did you have something you wanted to add?
Nope.
a canvas is clean. Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. Gravels 44 said, crossing my fingers that they don't screw it up. Remember, it's shaken, not stirred. Josh Doyle, hoping for the best, preparing for the worst. that's a bit of a weird one. Sledge Nordman said, Amazon will completely ruin the franchise. We'll wait and see on that one. and then Liam said he's worried that Amazon will just pick some guy with a big Insta following to play James Bond, which I guess is quite a big concern. Stephen Dayden said that Apple should have bought the rights. They would have been a better match.
I agree.
Yeah. Cockatoo Quill said, really hope they keep James Bond as vintage as he always has been. And then I guess this is mainly echoing the main concern for most people. And Butcher said they will soon dilute Bond with multiple spin-offs and another terrible competition show. But yeah, I think just a lot of people just saying, you know, that it's to them, it doesn't seem like such a great idea. But, you know, we will, you know, wait to find out what happens next.
Look, I think this is, I think we should all approach it with an open mind, because I think this could potentially be an exciting time. It means we are going to get something Bond related, at least, you know.
Yeah.
The gaps have become huge, cavernous in between projects.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we might end up regretting that and it's wall to wall, month to month, like Marvel do. But I think until we know facts, solid facts about what the plan is, I think we should be quite excited, actually.
Yeah. And I think one thing as well I keep coming back to is that, as I said at the beginning, like every decision that we sort of tried to speculate about was always seen through that specific prism of what would Barbara and Michael do?
Yeah.
And how have they always done things? And what will that mean for the next Bond, the next director? They'll choose someone safe. They'll choose someone who is interesting, has a certain level of fame. All that is off the it's now fair game now. And the other thing is all these directors who have, you know, talked about wanting to do Bond but not being able to get the creative control. Yeah. Now that's a thing, right? So think back to Quentin Tarantino. He wanted to make a black and white Casino Royale with Pierce Brosnan. Let him do it. Like, that could be a thing. Christopher Nolan, you know, said he would do it, but he'd want complete creative control. Give it to Nolan. Obviously, he's busy. Denis Villeneuve didn't want to work in someone else's world. He could make it his own world. And that, to me, is an exciting prospect. You know, if it was me, I would be, and I'm not making a decision, but I would want to make a statement with my first Bond 26 at Amazon. I'd be the one going, what is going to make people sit up and take notice? Is it, do we get Steven Spielberg to make a James Bond film? Could you imagine that? Like Bond 26, Steven Spielberg, everyone would be like, this is it. I'm in. There would be no like qualms about that, right? That's the sort of decision I think they need to make. And I think that's where, that's the flip side to it, right? The gloves are off. Anything is fair game now.
Yeah, do they go back to the 60s, which now they've got the financial backing now. They can do that. There's no, budget is not an issue anymore.
Yeah, all the stuff that we always used to say about brand product placement. It's not really an issue anymore. Amazon's the brand. That's what they want to sell, along with, you know, all the other Amazon products. Amazon, he'll be using Alexa, won't he? That'll be his personal assistant.
Reading his Kindle.
Yeah. But you're right. Like the period piece could be back on.
Yeah. And there's no reason why a period, why can't they have a vintage Bond and modern Bond? And, you know, they could be doing it at the same time. They're not. They don't need to be unique projects, you know.
But what you don't want to happen is like the DC stuff and the, you know, where they do like a Gotham series and stuff where actually all those things don't matter. And you've just got lots of things happening where you go, oh, did you see that one? No, I didn't watch that one. I found it a bit boring. Do you see that one? Yeah, that one was all right. That one was great. Because that completely changes everything about Bond. I think the thing about Bond is that it was all about the time between the films, the excitement of watching it, the time it took for the video to come out. That was why Bond has done so well. I mean, a lot of the films probably weren't good enough to justify that level of excitement, but you still were excited and you still liked it and you still watched it on Christmas Day, all those sorts of things. That's gone. That's completely gone now. Any excitement around like the next thing getting launched is sort of just pulled into this whole Amazon delivery schedule now of whatever's coming out all the time, which sort of lessens what you get from it. But I think you're right. Initially, there's a big play to go for. They could do some really good things initially, and I think they probably will. They're not going to mess up one of their most expensive IPs they've ever paid for, because they want it to start off well. I think the long tail is the thing that's the risky thing, and that's the thing that I'm worried about, because I think what will happen is if they're not careful, it will be a gradual watering down of Bond over and over the years until the point where it no longer becomes in any way exciting. And people aren't, you know, looking forward to the next film or anything coming out because it's just, there's just stuff coming up all the time.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a concern, right?
And go on. But if that happens and we hurtle towards 2035, Bond goes out of copyright. So then that opens up a massive new avenue for all.
If everyone's not completely bored of it by then and nobody wants that copyright.
Casino Royale comes out of copyright, right? So there's only a certain amount of Bond that comes out of copyright. I think there is like a bit like people keep saying 2035 Bond is like public domain. I don't think it's quite as clear cut as that, right? Because, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it'll get messy again. That's when it's.
Yeah, it's going to. Yeah. That's going to be when we do the next podcast. Yeah. But what was I going to say? Yeah, I guess like my point is, well, I have no point really, but like I think Amazon, you know, they have a hit and miss, right, with what they've done in the past. It all now falls on who they get to steer the ship forward. Mm. And this idea of like what the future looks like for Bond, I think everyone immediately says spin-offs. I think Bond 26 is definitely the next step for them, right? Mm. Aside from Road to a Million and perhaps, you know, some documentaries about Bond girls or Bond cars or like all that sort of stuff like that everyone wants, but no, they've never done. Plus all the merchandising that they can do, like the Lego sets and the, I don't know, like all the Bond, fun Bond stuff that you just want, like that they just have not given fans. But like the stuff, the spin-offs, I think that sometimes people get a bit like, you know, the shorthand is they're going to do a Moneypenny spin-off, right? Mm, that's the, or Q. But there's so much more they could be doing, right? Mm-hmm. You've got prequels to films that we already know, like what's the backstory to Oddjob? You know, how did he get to his position? Mm. You've got things that take place in between movies, right? So you could dip into like something that happened between two different movies and be like, fill in the blanks to that.
Rogue One.
Yeah, exactly. The Rogue One story. How did you get to the point where Daniel Craig was getting that list at the start of Skyfall? Like, what was the story that brought you up to that? Mm. My point is, what I really hope for is that Amazon don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You've got this rich heritage of 26, 25, 27 films, however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Take that and make what you can of it. That's the stuff people know. Yes, you'll bring in new people, but like you can do the Cruella version, right, of Goldfinger or, I don't know, we can do...
Oh, God, can you imagine that?
Yeah. Or like the origin story for... I don't know. Largo. I mean, Largo's not a great example.
I don't think many people are going to watch that.
But you can do animations, like I was saying at the Christmas episode. Animations, like...
Animations would be good, yeah.
Yeah.
But this comes back to, what was it? I think, get it right, what Charlie Higginson was saying about writing as Bond, where he is a man in a moment and you don't want to hear about all the thoughts and feelings and story surrounding what he's doing. He's there at that point in time. It's exciting to just see that you know, bit of his life, that bit of adventure that he's having. And and once you start to go around that, you change the character and you start to give him dimensions that nobody historically has ever wanted. But if that changes, then Bond is going to radically change into a more three-dimensional character that has got a lot more to him, which may be maybe the way it has to go. Because, you know, it might not be what everyone wants these days, just getting that one.
I mean, you've got so many other things. Like, there's so much stuff to watch, so much content. I know Barbara Broccoli hated it being referred to as content.
Sorry, Barbara.
They're going to need to do that. They need to make him a fully fleshed out.
Yeah, you have to, don't you?
Yeah, you can't stick with it because he just seems like a really shallow, empty character you know, stories that are rich and deep and varied. So I think they're going to have to change the way they do it.
Mm. Yeah. And other options, you know, they could go back to the books. They could remake the books, right? That's now back on the menu, right? They always wanted to move things forward, but let's have a period accurate Thunderball remake of like the book.
That'd be good.
Thunderball again.
I know. Yeah. all the novels that they could adapt that like have never been made, like all the continuation novels, yeah. And then bringing back old characters, right? I think there's an opportunity if they wanted to, like I said, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but let's have Ana de Armas in a Paloma movie. Mm-hmm. With Halle Berry's Jinx, like give people that, like people would enjoy that. It doesn't have to have Bond in it. These are fun characters, like they shouldn't always just be one and done. I do think there's a lot of potential there for it, but there's just so many question marks over it right now about like who's going to lead that forward, and is it going to be the right person or the right people? Mm-hmm. They're never going to please everyone. But then they shouldn't just be trying to please the old Bond fans. They need to bring new people in because kids aren't watching this stuff anymore.
No, I don't think a
James Bond book and they'll go, what's this?
Yeah. It's just, what's this? It's a spy film. Okay. I'm probably not going to watch it. But it's a tricky one. It's a fine line. I think Broccoli's and Michael have done a good job in the past of, like with GoldenEye, taking Bond to a new generation, but keeping it pretty much the same. So all of the older fans of it would go, yeah, this is it. This is Bond. And new people would find it an interesting action film. But I think it won't be as balanced now. I think they'll move it further away and go, look, the biggest audience we want here is the big audience. And then we have to make sure that the existing fans are relatively happy. I suppose they can tell who the fans are quite easily from, because they've been showing the movies for on the channel for a while, so they know what the size of the audience is for the Bond films.
Well, just look at the age of the people they've been interviewing on all the news channels about this story.
Right.
Yeah. That's where the interest is. It's people over, you know, 35. Anyone under 35.
Are young people interested in spies?
Yeah, I'm sure there's spies.
I mean, Slow Horses is massive.
Yeah, Black
with
Dubs.
Young people?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. And I just think there's a definite market there. And Amazon will know that. Yeah.
They just need to find a way to make it relatable to people, to young people. They want to be able to see themselves in that series and bring it to life, make it aspirational, take the doom and gloom out of it. Like, you know, make Tom Holland James Bond.
Yeah, we've probably come a step closer to a Tom Holland type person being Bond.
I think any list we've gone through in the past where we were trying to work out who's going to be the next Bond is probably widened a little bit.
I don't want to make assumptions, but I also think we've now taken a step away from any chance of being a non-white Bond at any point in the future with all the anti-DAI stuff that's happening in America at the moment. I just think that's not on the cards at all for the near future, which is a shame because I think Barbara and Michael were ready to make that step. Just look at, you know, what they did with No Time to Die and Lashana Lynch's character. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen now in any foreseeable future, which is a real shame. And that's something I think is a loss, I think.
Wow. That's nice to end on a bit of a downer there. But yeah,
okay.
You're right. got anything positive to end on?
What could we end on that's positive?
I watched Calvin, friend of the podcast. I watched his video on it. He was talking very similar to what we're talking about the good things and the bad things. He was talking about how he is sort of half ridiculously excited and half very, very worried. But I think he's right. It is exciting. I mean, I all of us are going to be very excited to watch that first thing that comes out, whether it's a TV show or a film. And I think. For the first couple of years, it's going to be pretty amazing.
Like Star Wars, right?
It's going to be pretty amazing.
Force Awakens, Rogue One, Last Jedi. That was exciting, right?
I think it's just going to be, you know, what happens after that. I don't know. I think with Star Wars, it's a little bit different because Star Wars did have a lot of, outside of the movies, there was a lot of other stuff always going on with Star Wars. It was a pretty prominent thing within the media landscape. Bond isn't. Bond's very, you know, specific. There's not loads going on with Bond. You've got some books, you've got the movie every 6 years or whatever. It's not the same thing as Star Wars. So I think how people are going to react to it is going to be very different than Star Wars. So I think it's really interesting. But I think it's going to be, that first 2 years is going to be a really eye-opening is to see how people are responding to it, because I don't think it's got the same legs as something like Star Wars, and I don't think Star Wars has got many legs left now anyway because of what Disney's done to it. But there's a lot you can do with Star Wars that's fun. With Bond, I think you're limited a bit more.
Final thoughts, Brendan?
Next Bond film expected delivery between 2027 and 2029. See what I did there?
I see what you did there, yeah.
My final thought is I'm open and excited about what's to come, to be honest. I think save any negativity until you've seen the film, and that we're years out from it. So,
save any negativity you see if they choose to be Bond.
I think for me, final thoughts is just, I think I'm just sad that it's the end of an era. I think I'm sad that like the Eon era of James Bond is officially over. And, you know, 25 films, it was a good run. There's something there for everyone to enjoy. We certainly enjoyed it to a point. And now the future is for someone else to take forward. And it's just a whole new world that, you know, might be for us, might not be for us. And that's okay, because we had the 25 films that we really enjoyed.
Plus, it's nice and neat, though, isn't it?
Nice and neat
box set. We can die in the knowledge that we saw all of the Eon films in their entirety.
But they never released a 4K box set, so... Well, on that note, then, I'll say thank you very much for listening to the podcast. You can't email us anymore because I deleted the website and didn't sign up for the domain again.
That's it. It really is the end of an era, isn't it?
Yeah, but you can find us on Instagram still. We're still on there. And at James Bond A to Z. If you want to message us, do it on there. And listen, guys, it's been a pleasure getting back together. Shame we had to do it over Skype. We will do it in person next time. Maybe we'll do something for one of the anniversaries this year. Who knows?
Well, we've got to do something for the announcement, haven't we?
Do we? I feel like well, now we'll just stick to Eon. Well, let's just stick to the Eon era Bond. Like, I think maybe we're opening a can of worms if we say we're going to do something on everything now. I think this is a good time to.
Yeah, we're going to review the first film, though, aren't we?
Will we?
I'm sure you'll message us in 2 years' time and go, come on, guys, I'm excited.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Can't wait to see Chalamet in his first Bond film.
Yeah, in the Hawker spin-off. Okay, well, thanks very much for listening. I've been Tom Butler. It's been Tom Wheatley and Brendan Duffy, and the James Bond A to Z podcast might return. Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Alexa, who's the best James Bond?
It all depends on what you want from a Bond, but my own preferences would be Connery for the cool, Moore for the quips, Brosnan for the charm, and Craig for the killer moves.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.